Fuckity fuck fuck, episode 2. I suppose I have officially decided that I must start each episode with saying the word fuck 3 times. It's sort of like I'm summoning Beetlejuice, except instead I'm summoning, I don't know, I guess like my depressed homies? Is that fucked up? Welcome to Depressed and Shit. I'm your host, Leah Matta. This past week since launching the first episode with June Song, it's really been a whirlwind. And I want to keep it real with you. For the time being, or at least the last week, my mental health hasn't been half fucking bad. And I can tell you exactly why. So my depression has 2 primary sources. I've come to realize this gradually over time, ever since the 7th grade, when the depression fairy visited me for the first time, offered me a Prozac under my pillow, I turned it down. Okay, no, cut that. Bad jokes. So those 2 sources of my depression, sources, causes, explanations, whatever you want to call it, are loneliness and rejection. And honestly, those 2 things are really intertwined, but I want to take a second to focus on rejection socially, like social rejection. So I am an actor. Well, like was, and like, I'm not really sure what verb tense to use in that sentence these days. Like my main medium is theater. Is theater ever coming back? Who fucking knows? But anyway, previous to the pandemic, I experienced like nonstop rejection. Now, this is no unusual story for any actor versed in the audition process. Really, it's not out of the ordinary. But once the pandemic hit and auditions stopped, I finally fully realized what the rejections were doing to my psyche. Because it wasn't just like, oh no, I didn't get the job, on to the next one. Like some actors are really good at that. For me, it's like an all-encompassing feeling. Am I unlikable? Am I ugly? Like, is there something inherently or permanently wrong with my voice, hair, name, personality? That's a big one. Am I even worth knowing or paying attention to? Like, really taxing shit. And it caused me really chronic sadness. I thought about these things constantly. But then, in the creation of this podcast, I finally have an opportunity to just do my thing. Like, maybe I've been doing it wrong this whole time. Like, as an actor, I've been trying for years to play other characters, other people, and, you know, failing, I guess. And then with this podcast, I'm enjoying just being me and just putting it out there. And it's been like incredibly therapeutic for me. And I hope deeply that it's therapeutic for you too. Otherwise, this podcast has no purpose. Okay, that got really fucking real for a second. Let's talk about today's episode. Let's escape our feelings and talk about fun things. I have to get way better at managing feeling vulnerable if I'm going to keep doing this podcast. Okay, today I have on a wonderful woman named Ariana Vergara Johnson. She identifies as a first-generation Peruvian American as well as a member of the LGBTQ+ community. Now, last week I promised you variety, and with this episode, guess what? You're going to get it! As in, the word depression doesn't even get dropped a single time, actually. In this episode, we do stay in the mental health realm. We hear about a taxing mother-daughter relationship and discuss themes of loneliness, values, community, and how those can cause people to behave in loving or not so loving ways. Now, I want to say real quick that religion comes up quite a bit, and I am not personally a particularly religious person, and you'll hear this experience, okay, in which conflicting religion causes confusion and emotional pain. But I do think religion can be a really wonderful and helpful system and community for people. And I respect those that find healthy comfort in it. And honestly, I'm freaking jealous of you. Okay, here we go. Oh, real quick, next week's episode, we hear from a man experiencing depression who's trying out EMDR, I had to write that down, a psychotherapy treatment I don't know a damn thing about. And I think that's going to be really interesting. But for now, let's hear from Ariana Vergara Johnson, everyone. Let's go.
Hi, is because a lot of gay people, like, and a lot specifically like so lesbians and like famous gay men are like tweeting and posting, like telling normal people to like get their shit in order in case things happen politically, right? In case
you mean rescinding of rights.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or questioning any power of attorney, etc.
Right.
Right. So like part of the reason why we're so anxious to get the certificate, like proving that we're married and like the wallet copies. And then I actually wanted a specific kind that allows you to adopt, is because I'm really scared. And Natalie knows this. I'm really scared of everything that's happening politically. Right.
Yeah. And, oh, like, yeah.
Right. So I'm more anxious than she is, like, for sure. So the fact that, like, she planned a date to do this is a big deal because she's really, really stoic.
And, do you think you being more anxious than her about this, though, is a common theme in your relationship or no?
Yeah, no. Well, yes, I do think so because my parents are immigrants and I'm Hispanic and Nat's white.
Got it.
But politically speaking, yeah, I think I get way more anxious. I think I'm way more, like, not that she isn't, but I'm way more involved in politics and like I
still that's really unfair that you're having to reserve so much mental space right now to worry about something right. That is should so fucking simply be a right. Like it's crazy to me. Similarly, I'm trying to decide. So I have an IUD, it's my birth control, and I technically still have another year on it until it just, you know, like fucking evaporates, stops working inside my body. But I'm trying to decide if I want to get it replaced before November 3rd, because I have no idea if access to things like that is going to suddenly drastically change. Yeah. Yes.
I totally understand where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. And I can affirm and validate your anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's really sad that we have to start worrying about all of these things as women or as like a gay person and as sex.
So, okay. So spoiler alert for our listeners, Ariana is already happily married. She's revealed that. Not that that was no like ruin to my plan, but so I want to move retroactively. We're going to be spending time today talking about essentially the two primary women in your life, right? And truly, it sounds like your relationship with each could not currently be more different, at least from my perspective. And I'll be curious to hear you weigh in. And those two women in your life are your mother and your partner, your newlywed wife. So my first question is, can we backtrack? We're going to first talk about your relationship with your mom. So I want to backtrack and ask you a little about the value system in your household, value systems, plural, in your household growing up. I'm presuming that you did not come out in high school.
I did not come out in high school. No, I did not. I wasn't even in the closet. I think I was in like Narnia, right? If we're using like a wardrobe, Chronicles of Narnia, like I was way like so not woke to anything that I was feeling.
Well, so that being said, can you tell us a little about the value systems in your like nuclear family?
Sure. So I'm Peruvian American. I'm a first generation Peruvian American. My parents are both physicians. They're both very accomplished. My mother specifically was a woman who graduated from med school in Peru at 16 and had children like very quickly.
Really? Like what, yeah, like 20?
Like 19 and 21. Okay. And she ended up, and she wasn't even married. So it was like, and this is so very scarlet lettery, right?
Is that, would you say that's more sort of typical in Peruvian culture or no? She was even an outlier in that sense? Okay.
No, my mom was definitely an outlier. She was one of four women in her medical school class. Only two of those women graduated.
Mm-hmm.
And my godmother is actually the other woman from her med school class, and she never got married.
Wow. Okay. But what about like religion or spirituality? Yeah.
My parents are Catholic. They're both Catholic. So her getting pregnant before getting married was huge. Like, like very faux pas. So there's a lot of shame. Wow. I think there was a lot of shame for both of my parents in getting pregnant.
Is it preposterous of me to ponder about abortion? Like, would have abortion never been on the table for them?
No, at that time, no.
Yeah.
At that time, I definitely don't think it was. I think for conservative Peru, no way. Anyway, so, you know, fast forward 13 and 15 years later, I was born in California. And, you know, my dad was kind of in and out of my life.
Yeah.
So he was just a philanderer. There was a lot of infidelity, and that lasted throughout their relationship.
Got it.
And because of that, my mom definitely raised me.
Yes.
With she a was value your... system. Yes.
She was the one.
She was my everything, arguably. And I was her everything. I think to a degree that my siblings couldn't be, just because my mother had more time for me on the weekends. And that's something that my siblings didn't get to enjoy at all.
So it's you spent, really so you got to spend a lot of time with your mom just on the weekends in general. Yeah. It was a luxurious time. In your adolescence, like any year up before college, did you guys have any kind of major clashes unrelated to, you know, gender, sexual orientation, that kind of stuff? Like,
I'm going to say, okay, so this goes with the value system. So my parents got divorced when I was in high school, like officially, but my dad was in and out of my life until then. So he like left and no one really explained it to me, but that's okay.
Classic.
But, you know, basically my mom was, she taught me everything. So we were in a matriarchal conservative Catholic family in which academic accomplishment and intellect, I think, was valued more than anything else. So my mom definitely cared about my grades, definitely cared about what I looked like. So I think my value system definitely came from accomplishment. And my mom's very beautiful. I say that to everybody. Like, she's 73. She looks 65. She I've never seen her go out of the house without makeup.
This is so interesting, Ariana. You're being so like kind and empathetic and complimentary towards your mother, whom in a bit, I think you'll share with us some more strenuous times you've experienced with her and are still kind of, you're like currently in the thick of them. So I think it's interesting and significant that you're, I mean, I guess you still go back to the love that you have at the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, it's unconditional love. I'm always going to love my mom, whether or not she loves me or expresses that love in a healthy way, regardless of whatever happens, you know, and whether or not she's in my life, like, I'm incredibly grateful.
So then moving forward, then at what point did you begin to realize your sexual orientation?
Okay, so if I was really like super self-aware or nearly as smart as I wanted to think I was in high school, I would have figured out freshman year that I was in love with
high school.
But okay. I was not woke. And I think I was just so enamored by this, like, this person who I thought was just like the bee's knees. Like, I just thought she was so beautiful and so smart. And I would have figured that out, but I had a huge crush on her and nothing ever happened.
But you weren't woke when you were 14. And that's probably for 1,000 different explanations of the homophobia that is buried deep, deep in American society.
Yeah.
But okay. So when did that start to change?
I didn't really start to figure out until I was in college.
Right, right.
And then I think going to Paris really helped. I know that sounds ridiculous.
Were you coming out to individuals as you were realizing it?
I'm going to be honest. I don't think I really came out to anyone until I had sex. And then I had sex.
Why is that? You're not fully a lesbian until you've had lesbian sex.
I think in my head it was like that. So I'm a gold star. I've never had sex with a man. So like, I've had like random boyfriends. I actually got proposed to before by a guy. But anyway, so I had sex. I had a month long thing. And then I had sex and I was like, okay, I'm a lesbian. I'm going to tell everybody. And so then I did. I told everybody.
Including your family?
Including my family. I was like, yeah, I did.
Can you describe to us your coming out conversation specifically with your mom?
So I called my mom. She had a harder time with it, I think. I don't remember how it went. I think I might have blacked it out, to be honest. But all I remember is that we didn't really talk for 6 to 9 months, but at the time I didn't care because I was so vain and just so excited to be authentically myself. Yeah.
You had this like deep feeling of elation.
Yeah. I was really stoked. Yeah.
So you said you guys didn't talk for 6 to 9 months, in which time you felt amazing. Did that adrenaline sort of dissipate? Like, was there any sort of come down from that period?
No, I think for me in my head, she kind of came back, but my mom seemed totally okay with everything. And then the next girlfriend I had, I like my mom met her a few times and nothing happened. Like my mom wasn't rude. She wasn't like, mm-hmm. like any issues with it. She didn't really question me about it. Okay. And it didn't really come up until I got married.
Right. So then let's skyrocket into the future. Although I guess technically it's still the retroactive future because we're talking the past 6 months now. So we've already spoiler alerted. Ariana's now married to her wonderful wife, Natalie. Here we are. It's like early 2020. You guys are planning your wedding. You've already decided to do it. And then something changes abruptly in your mom's approval of the whole situation, I suppose.
So it coincided with COVID. I kind of see the catastrophe and pandemonium of COVID echoed in my mom's attitude towards me being gay. I think they're actually I think it's a good metaphor. I think that basically, you know, March 13th is my birthday. I feel like a lot of people use March 13th as like the turning point for COVID.
Yeah.
And I think that's really true for my mom. So I talked to her on March 13th. And she was like, you're not going to have a wedding, right? Like, it's just not going to happen. And then I was like, well, I don't know, Mom. I mean, we'll see.
Was she like, saying because of COVID?
At the time, she was arguing because of COVID.
Do you think she was, using it as a convenient excuse?
Oh, yes. Except I would not realize that for a few more telephone conversations.
Right.
But that was her impetus. At the time, I just thought she was a physician. I mean, she's a doctor. And she was just worried about worried about me because I'm immunocompromised, worried about our guests. I genuinely thought she was worried about health. So I took all of her antipathy towards the wedding as social responsibility and being in a health pandemic that at the time was really esoteric and kind of misunderstood, right? Like no one knew what the fuck was happening.
No.
And then as time went on and we had more conversations, it became really apparent to me that this was not about COVID.
Right.
This was about her newfound Christianity. Like,
and where the fuck did that come from?
I don't know. I still don't know.
So we're Catholic. Not so Catholicism. So you said you were raised in a Catholic household.
Yeah, I'm super Catholic. Yeah.
But this is her current religious beliefs are some like different form of Christianity.
Yes. Like, so she's not even listening to the Pope.
And
right?
this is new for her, right? Or at least a change from when you were
younger. Huge change. Very big change.
What the fuck explains that?
You know, I've analyzed it a few times. I think that, you know, my mom is lonely. I think she feels abandoned by me. I think that she turned to religion as a form of companionship. And I think that she found it in this Christian sect that she's in.
Mm-hmm. I get seeking community. Community is extremely important to me in my life, but damn, it's about finding those healthy communities.
I know. Yeah.
The ones that really emphasize, you know, like inclusivity and like acceptance.
So yeah, for sure. I totally agree. So there's a number of reasons I think for that happening. I mean, I still can't reason it all out.
Right.
I mean, is there cause? Yeah. When I think about it in terms of the amount of loss that I think she's had.
Yeah.
I mean, so my family, my nuclear family has had two aneurysms, a stroke, cancer, mm-hmm. and triple bypass. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. Like we have a lot of health issues.
Yeah.
And each and every time my mother's life has been impacted by each and every one of those more than everybody else because she's the matriarch. So I think she's trying to like seek reason for all of this mayhem. And I think COVID put her over the edge. That's what I think COVID put her over the edge.
I mean, I think COVID forced us all to look at our values and relationships pretty aggressively. We had no choice. I mean, if anything, we just had nothing to do. So we had to sit with our brains quietly for the first time in decades.
Yeah. Mm. Which is scary.
So then, so was it one conversation where she officially dropped the bomb on you of not believing in a lesbian wedding? Like, is that what it was? What exactly is her disapproval? And what did that final conversation look like?
So there was one big conversation where it became very apparent to me that my mother was forcing me to choose between my wife and her. So there was definitely like a climax, and it didn't go the way that she wanted because I picked Natalie. So I do think that there was a climax. I don't think that she thought I was going to pick Natalie. I think she thought I was going to pick her.
And what did that week after that climax, that phone conversation, what did that week after look like for you?
Okay. So that night, I don't remember that week, but that night I cried so hard that I threw up 2 times.
Oh my God.
I kept on crying that whole week, like desperately.
I mean, even I remember getting texts from you and not like, I didn't even know what to say. Like, it's just so, it's so baffling. There were no words.
I mean, like no one really knew what to say. Natalie didn't know what to say. Natalie was optimistic the whole time. I have to admit, she really was.
Well, that's actually a great point. Like, that must have been, I'm assuming for me, that must have been like so fucking weird to have your mom tell you, no, I don't approve of your partner. And then to get off the phone and look at your partner and have to like tell them what just happened. Like, what the fuck was that like with Nat? Yeah.
So Natalie and my mom really got along. So I think for Nat, it was really hurtful. Like, they used to go to brunch all the time.
Yeah.
My mom used to get a kick out of Natalie making fun of me because no other girlfriend had ever really made fun of me as much or challenged me. So my mom really enjoyed Nat. And like subsequent conversations when we'd talk, my mom would tell me that she loved me and she loved Natalie and that like everything would be okay if we just didn't get married.
So that, like, she's fine with you guys going out in public, holding hands, you know, living together, but just official marriage itself crosses a line for her?
I think so. I think the manifestation of a ceremony being so official scared her. After this whole like dreadful conversation in which she like finally revealed that like she's speaking her truth and that I'm going to hell and I'm a sinner and I'm like composed of demons and Natalie's like infected by demons and all these things, like these very, like very kind of cliche things that you vivid hear people say.
Yeah, it is, yeah, a little cliche, but yeah, still
super cliche,
but still, yeah, sounds extremely damaging to actually have that be said to you in real time.
It was awful. And you know, I got a tirade, an incessant amount of texts and like apocalypse videos and like
from her,
from my mother. Yeah. Mm. On WhatsApp and then on iMessage and then emails. I mean, I've been inundated. My mom inundated me with like a number of YouTube videos and like sound bites, like just basically saying how evil I am.
Woo.
Yeah. It's hard.
Was there any point where you temporarily blocked her or like set any kind of boundary?
No, I just never clicked on them. Natalie used to click on them and that used to piss me off.
So your boundary was essentially to just not open them.
Didn't acknowledge them.
I have a whole thing with the concept of setting boundaries. People are always telling me set boundaries. And what's annoying for me about that is that just because you tell another person in your life that you're setting the boundary doesn't mean that they're actually going to respect it.
Yeah, I think even if I had said that to her, she wouldn't have respected that, it. Yeah. I know my sister tried, and yet like that still didn't stop my mom from sending videos.
I'm really glad you have your sister throughout all of this.
Oh yeah, me too. Yes, my sister is the best. Yeah.
So June 2020 comes and goes. You two inevitably have to cancel your what would have been your wedding, you know, a wonderful celebration, happiness, love, all that stuff. 2020 sucks for so many reasons. So then we come to September, you guys wind up having a small wedding. How much have you talked to your mom, if at all, over the course of the summer and now into the early fall?
Since I got married, I haven't talked to her
at all.
No. And she's stopped texting me like videos and apocalypse videos and stuff. So she's stopped contacting me. The last thing I really know that happened is that she boycotted my Zoom wedding to my relatives. That's like the last thing I know.
You mean she refused to watch it?
She boycotted it, as in she called my relatives and told them not to watch.
She made a point of telling them. Okay. Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. So I gave like a little TED talk at Booth. So I go to the University of Chicago Business School, whatever.
Yeah.
But it was coming out. No, but it was coming out week this week, right? So mm-hmm. I'm a co-chair for the club. And I mean, I haven't really talked about this. So I like spoke for like 12 minutes about it, which was really therapeutic. And, you know, coming out isn't just one instance, right? For a gay person, you relive it every day. And depending on how comfortable you are, how much fight you have in you, you make it a point to like clarify when people assume you're straight. And that happens to me a lot, right? So every day is like coming out for me, especially if it's a stranger
mm-hmm.
Or an employer or potential employer. So I will say though that like my mother definitely, like I feel like there's two coming outs, right? There's coming out when I was 23 where I really didn't care and I was kind of numb to the pain. I did care, but I was just so excited and young right. and selfish.
You were hyped on adrenaline.
Yeah. And there's a second coming out when I'm 33, right? And I'm older and wiser. And I think I value relationships a lot more, especially ones with people who are wiser than me yeah. and have more experience.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I just value that connection. And so now I feel like when I value it, I've kind of lost it.
Lost what?
But I lost whatever ease and comfort I had with my mother. Not like the fact that she is clearly not still loving towards me now makes me realize, okay, there's always kind of like an insecure attachment and she has an issue within herself for like not loving herself, maybe to the degree that I thought she did, right? So basically everything that she's acting towards me, you know, has something to do with her.
Is some sort of inner turmoil yes. that she
right.
is possibly aware of, but more likely not aware of.
Exactly. Yeah.
You had said that you recently got back into therapy, that you found a therapist that you really like.
Yeah, I do. I really like him.
When did you start going to him?
Oh my God, I think I can actually like remember the day. So I've been in therapy for like, since I came out. So I've been in therapy off and on for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to go to therapy when I was in the Bay Area. But my therapist cost a lot of money. And I like,
so many of them no do. Longer... Oh, yes. Don't get yeah, me started on that as well. I have a lot of feelings about that.
Basically, my therapist was out of my pay grade when I didn't have a job, right? So I'm going to school.
But it was a priority to you.
Yes, but clearly not a priority enough while I was in school to pay.
Oh,
that
I see
much.
What you're saying. Yeah, I see.
Yeah. So I started going in the beginning of August. I think my like
oh, so it is pretty yeah. fresh. Like just super maybe fresh. two yeah. and a half 2 months maximum, maybe.
Yeah, 2 months max. Yeah. And I like him a lot.
You had said that he's also Latinx, correct?
He is. He's also Latinx.
And he's also LGBTQ+.
Yes, he's also LGBTQ+. So he gets a lot of the things I talk about, which is
that important to you in the selecting of a therapist, a person that possesses similar qualities like sexual orientation, race, gender, career. I don't know any of that stuff.
You know what? I'm going to say, I don't know, because my longest relationship with a therapist before this was a cis straight man mm-hmm. who was 68 and we had a great rapport.
Mm.
So I don't know. Yeah. But I will say this time I did specifically ask for someone of a Hispanic heritage because okay. I was dealing with my mother who I don't know if everyone would understand my culture or my ideology yeah. if they didn't grow up that way
just
or
like
what exactly
South,
I'm feeling.
South American values and
or Mexican, whatever, or just Catholic yeah. and Hispanic. Just
yeah.
like one of those things put together. So there's a lot of guilt and shame. Right. In Catholic culture.
Oh,
and then
God.
There's a lot of machismo yeah. culturally. Mm-hmm. Right. So like women are kind of subjected to a number of responsibilities that maybe men aren't. Mm. Right. And I wanted someone who understood that.
And then he was just conveniently also of the LGBTQ.
Yeah.
LGBTQ plus world.
Yeah. I didn't request that, but
that must be nice
that was
though.
Very convenient.
Yeah.
Super nice. Yeah. No, I mean, I've only been working with him for 2 months, but I feel like I honestly see therapy as a self-care. It's like a gift to myself. So right. Every Friday I get like an hour to myself and I can vent about everything that's bothering me and see things from new perspectives. And that's really exciting. So I really look forward to it. It is like, even if it's emotional and I get a little teary-eyed or something, I still think it's worth it. She's just one in a million. And I feel very fortunate that like I get to spend my life with her. But she's annoying too. I mean, we're in quarantine. Quarantine's rough for all couples, yeah, right? Whether you're newlyweds or not.
Whether you live together or not, as I've
been. I live with my partner. So. Yeah. It's, you know, they're annoying. So she's got her own flaws, but for the most part, I think she's been great. I feel like I've been very moody, especially with all this stuff with my mom and instability.
You have a lot of fair reason to be moody.
Yeah. But the thing is, you know, because I know she loves me unconditionally, which is a crazy thing to say because I don't feel like my mother does. So I had like a crisis of faith for a little bit about ever being lovable, which is like an ongoing thing.
Yeah. I mean, if you're we're learning being loved first from our mom before anyone in the world. So that's sort of it's what we compare all other relationships to our whole lives, no matter what we do.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's really hard, right? Because my mother, who's supposedly the only person I can really count on because my dad was really not in my life to love me unconditionally, like didn't. And so then like, you know, I'm getting married and of course that went through my head. Like I'd be lying. Like,
right.
Of course it went through my head that this could all be a farce and maybe love's dead and it's all just a joke and we're all just playing into it and blah, blah. But I will say there is something about Natalie, like when she looks at me and when she really talks to me, and I do believe that she does love me unconditionally. And that's something crazy. And the fact that I can even say that now is amazing considering everything that's happening. So at the end of the day, I know that Natalie would pretty much do anything for me, which is a crazy thing to think.
Well, you're most definitely worth loving. I can say that.
Thanks, Leah.
Here's a question. Who do you think in your family is going to listen to this episode? Is it possible this episode could trickle back to your mom?
Oh, no. My sister's going to listen to this and Nat's going to listen to this. I don't think my brother or my mom will. No.
Just curious.
Ariana,
I really admire the shit out of your tenacity. I think you manage somehow to be extremely strong, even in the face of extremely emotionally strenuous situations. And I think you also do an amazing job of hanging on to your loved ones beyond your nuclear family and dedicating time to those relationships, you know, so that you have your sort of own new little nuclear family.
I know that's like that, you know what, that's something new, I have to admit. You were talking about value systems earlier, and I definitely come from a value system in which blood relatives, regardless of whether or not I know them, regardless of whether I've only met them once or zero, like you're supposed to adore them and pretend like they're your best friend and like give them everything. And I come from that background.
Yeah, me too.
And that's how I grew up and that's how my mom acted. And so since all of this happened, I've like, examine that and realize that like I don't really go by that value system anymore. I am going to choose my own family. Yeah, and I'm going to adopt, which has nothing to do with blood. So, you know, I'm also like changing my paradigms and the way that I've grown up.
Yeah.
Like it's very different.
That's really cool, Ariana. Yeah. You're really cool.
Depressed and Shit was recorded in a real live bedroom in Los Angeles, California. Music by Eric England, logo designed by Carrie Weiss, produced and hosted by Real Honest Batch Leah Matta. Do you have reactions to today's episode? Do you have an experience with mental health you'd like to share? Or are you the baby angel from the heavens that wants to donate to cover administrative costs and all that fun shit? Email us at depressedandshitpodcast@gmail.com. No asterisk here, folks. That's just the logo. Shit is spelled S-H-I-T, baby. To repeat, depressedandshitpodcast@gmail.com. See you next Wednesday.